Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the second Monday of the month, it must be Law Talk, and sponsored by Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis. And we have a returning veteran, we'll call you, Blake Whiteman. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be here, Dave.
This is great. Last time you were awesome, and you know your stuff. That's what I really like. But beyond that is all your attorneys and staff, you're just nice people.
We were sort of talking about that a little bit off the air. We have a real family business, if you can say that, for a law firm that has 25 lawyers. We enjoy each other's company. We enjoy working together. We have an open-door policy where any lawyer can walk into any other lawyer's office and bounce an idea off them, and it really helps us get along. I think it helps our clients, too.
You know, you're right. It does translate to service, because when the whole group gets along and it's a happy, healthy environment, and not only that, but you're excellent technically, guess who is a beneficiary? It's all the clients.
Well, that's what our mission is, and it's one of those it's something that happens almost unintentionally, because we don't try to get along, we just get along. I don't think you can fake that anyway, but we all are real competitive, so we want to win for our client. We want the best result for them, or we want the best corporate documents. That's the way we work.
See, I like that, and you have a quite diverse group. You want to describe the firm a little bit? Of course, it's right now our Hyten and Lewis, and you are down in the Chase Tower, which is sort of cool. That's a cool place.
It is. It's you can see just about anywhere from our building at one of the four corners of our office.
It's like the four corners in where you have all four states, right?
Exactly. You can look out and see Bank One Ballpark, or I guess they call it Chase Field now.
And yeah.
America West Arena and South Mountain, and you walk the other side, Camelback Mountain. So it's a nice location. It's close to the courts, which is probably the primary reason we're there, is so that we can spend less travel time. That translates to a lower fee for the client, and we do just about everything. Jim Hyten, who I know does a lot of stuff for you, Dave, he is maybe one of the brightest guys I've ever met. Outstanding transactional lawyer, outstanding tax lawyer, can draft any document relating to any business, does work in Arizona, just did some documents for a company in Texas, big projects, small projects. And he heads up that department. Bill Ridenour heads up the banking division. And really everything that has anything to do with financial institution, Bill Ridenour is your guy. And Tammy Lewis is our partner that handles bankruptcy matters, both for the creditors, you know, large corporations, and then we have Dan Zebelman, who works with her, who does a lot of the individual bankruptcy stuff. There are a lot of litigators there, and I chair the litigation department, and we can handle everything from class action lawsuits to general corporate litigation, title company litigation, civil litigation for construction companies or just individuals. We handle domestic relations, criminal law. We handle just about any kind of litigation you could come across. We represent a company that a space heater allegedly caused a fire, and it turns out it wasn't the space heater, it was something else. But just all the way down to neighbor disputes over, you know, that's my property. No, that's mine. The fence is supposed to be here. So there's not a lot we don't do.
I think that's awesome. Now, the key question is this. I think there's a split there at the firm between ASU and U of A. Who do you root for when the football game starts?
Well, if you're smart, you probably root for U of A, because Bill and Jim went to U of A.
That's what I was thinking.
And Jeff Burnick, who heads up our employment division, is a U of A grad, too. He's a real sharp guy and fun guy to work with, too. So they're U of A fanatics and have a lot of U of A paraphernalia. And but this year ASU beat them, so the ASU grads were pumping their chests out, so to speak.
That's right. And but I remember most of the time when we've probably had all your attorneys on, you've rotated in. And, yeah, it was always like U of A or ASU. Now, there are some other colleges that are intermixed there.
I went to ASU undergraduate school, but I went to the University of Nebraska Law School, so I'm a Nebraska fan probably more so. We have a couple of Iowa guys, Kurt Peterson, who's a partner who also does a lot of banking work, a lot of major loans, development loans, workouts, that type of thing. He's an Iowa guy. Damian Meyer, one of our associates, an Iowa guy. So we, you know, we have the spectrum. Then Dan Zevelman's a Washington guy, and Nebraska crushed Washington this
year. Hey,
there
we go. See, I knew you'd get that in.
And
That's good.
I hope Dan's listening out there, because we play him again in the Holiday Bowl, and that'll
be
interesting.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Do you? Oh, cool.
So we've got a little bit of everything.
That's fun, though. I mean, it keeps it lively with respect.
Oh, it does, and there's a fantasy football league in the office, and it's all about bragging rights. I think Bill Lolly, who does all of our we have so many lawyers, I could probably talk for an hour about all the lawyers, but Bill Lolly does a lot of our land planning work.
I remember that was a fascinating show when he was on.
He's a great guy. I think he's in first place in our fantasy league. At least last I heard, he was in first place.
Is he really? That's awesome. So it's a good sports environment too.
It is a good sports environment. Yeah. It's fun to talk about with the other guys and gals that we work with.
Well, that's awesome. Well, we're gonna have a great show today because you're on and you're gonna provide some expertise in an important topic. And we may even get to another topic, but first of all, the main topic is guardianships, and maybe we'll get to divorce and custody issues too. And because I think I read a stat once that in Arizona that there was a 67% divorce rate. Does that sound right? That is pretty high.
I don't know if it's that high, but it's pretty
high.
I've never checked the statistics on the number of marriages that end up in divorce, but it's probably at least 50%, because there's quite a few of them. It's gone down a little though.
Oh, has it?
And I think and you touched on it before the show. Financially, it's expensive to go through a divorce. Even if you don't have children, you've got to divide retirement accounts, and so you have to have a qualified domestic relations order, what they call a quadro order, drafted, and that's an additional expense. The filing fees are about $500 a piece, with service of process just under that. And so it's expensive, and you've got to also look at the assets have depreciated. You have a house that might have had some equity in it that's now upside down. A lot of your listeners probably have faced that situation if they bought prior to 06. So the equity that they had is gone. So now they can't sell the house. They can't refinance the house because the bank won't loan money that's in excess of the value. So you've got financial pressures, I think, that have kept people from filing. And business values have gone down.
So you've seen that. Mm-hmm. The divorce rate may have decreased, mainly for what used to be the reason why it increased was finances.
I think you have – it's a double-edged sword. Finance – or financial issues can cause stress on people, which stress is probably the trigger for a divorce. But it's also a reason that people are now not getting divorced, because financially they can't afford it. Maybe one of them's out of work, or they had to take a pay decrease, and so they can't financially support themselves without being married. So there are certainly people that are probably putting off divorce for financial reasons.
So it might be interesting. It may be divorce goes down, but therapy goes up, because now they're living together and they have to get along. Right?
Yeah, and maybe that's sort of the new reconciliation that the court will use.
Oh, really? So they have a standard, the courts?
Well, if you get divorced, you have to participate in counseling through the courts, or tell the court that you know counseling will not work. So maybe there'll be more people participating in that. And it's free counseling that the Maricopa County Superior Court provides.
Oh, really?
Conciliation services, yes.
So you mean prior to getting a divorce, they're trying to make an attempt to reconcile?
Exactly. If you file a petition for divorce, one of the things you have to do is either go to conciliation court and try to work it out, or you have to avow to the court under oath that there's no way counseling is going to work for you.
Wow. So that's interesting. And how do you have to give a reason why counseling will not work?
You do not have to give a reason, but if either party thinks it'll work, then you go. Even if one party says, no way it's not going to work, and the other one says, I think it will, then you have to try it.
So have you ever had a case where one party says, no, I mean, yes, it will work, and the other party, let's say the husband says it won't work because I got remarried, that's a problem.
Well, if they got remarried before their divorce was
exactly.
final, that marriage would be void.
But, that's what I'm thinking.
But the likelihood of success if one of them thinks it's not going to work is probably pretty low because they're going to go in with the attitude of, I'm just wasting my time.
So attorneys also have to be sort of dabble in psychology, at least understand it a little bit, because there's a lot of psychological things flying off the shelf.
I would say that the counselor term is justified because a lot of what you do is counseling. I met with a couple of clients this morning, and probably 50% of the meeting was telling them, look, it's going to be okay. You go through the things that are going to happen in whatever their situation is, but you tell them, look, this is going to be a bumpy road, but you will be okay. Here's the best case scenario. Here's the worst case. Neither one's probably going to happen. In fact, the best case is usually more likely than the worst case. So you do a lot of counseling.
Is the worst case staying married? Just kidding.
Well,
all right, maybe I'm bitter
people.
On marriage.
Yeah.
Well, there is a cure for divorce, though. It's called Don't Get Married. Okay, maybe not. Well, that's interesting. I bet you see it all, though. I mean, what about a mediation? Is that something you guys do, or do you ever recommend that?
We recommend mediation a lot, and we also do mediation. I have taken the mediation training program and have acted as a mediator a number of times. I'm also a judge pro tem, so that means I, A, sit on the bench in court, usually criminal court, and B, I handle settlement conferences where the court will appoint me to a contested litigation matter. The clients will come in with their lawyers, and I'll try to mediate a settlement.
Mm, that's got to be sort of interesting. You have to know a lot to do that, I bet.
Well, you have to learn a lot factually because you get the file ahead of time. You go through the position statements of both parties. You'll look at the discovery that's been conducted. I get the trial reporter out, which is a monthly newsletter, if you will, that tells the results of every kind of case. And then I get a compendium at the end of the year or a summary at the end of the year so I can look up a particular type of case. And when I mediate, I can tell people, look, this is the likely result you're going to get if you go to trial. To get there, you're going to have to pay this expert, this custody evaluator, or these attorney's fees, and you can tell them why it's a good idea that they settle. And a lot of times, in fact, so far, knock on linoleum that covers this wood.
It looks like here's some. Is this
I've
wood?
Got, yeah, this looks like wood.
There's some wood.
There's some wood. most of the time, I've been successful getting cases settled. I have yet to have a case not get settled.
Well, that's excellent because settling a case, hopefully it's involves compromise, and it would seem like it's a less costly way to go if you can settle, right?
It's definitely less costly. It does involve compromise. It is a lot about getting people to understand the process that they will have to go through if they don't settle, the cost that they will have to go through, both in terms of finances and in terms of their time away from their job or their family.
And the emotional cost of that.
Absolutely. And you've got to get people to look at that as a whole, the cost emotionally, as you mentioned, financially, to decide that maybe it is a better idea that I settle this.
Now, before we go on our break, have you ever seen a case where the parties become actually better friends after their divorce?
We've seen cases where parties are very good friends after divorce and co-parent extremely well, share holidays to where they'll go over to one house for Thanksgiving and the other house for the Christmas break. And we've seen cases where, this actually happened, it's been about 20 years now, but we were discussing a property settlement and the parties started out fighting over something. I don't remember if it was a painting or some art piece. And one of them said, you know what, it meant more to you, why don't you keep it? And the next thing you know, they're talking, and by the end of the meeting, they're holding hands, and the divorce was dismissed. So,
oh my gosh, so they got remarried. Oh, they never got divorced. Well, what a nice story that is during Christmas, especially this holiday season. And we are talking to Blake Whiteman from Reitenauer, Heighton and Lewis. How do you say that? We don't use the word specialist, but concentrate in family law? Is that how we would say it?
I would say I probably devote a great portion of my practice to family law.
Excellent. That is awesome, and we'll be right back.
How prepared are you for a criminal attack, fire, or medical emergency? The worst time to want a security system is after you need it. I'm Kara Lee, Director of Promotions for SafeTech Security. Now is the best time to secure your home, your family, and your peace of mind. Please contact me to get free equipment, free installation, and even free monitoring through our special program right now at safetechsecurity.com or call Kara at 602-510-6465. That's safetechsecurity.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Reitenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reitenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Law Talk, and in studio we have special guest Blake Whiteman from Reitenauer, Heighton & Lewis. Truly the best law firm I've seen. I'm a CPA for 30 years, and I know a lot of law firms. You guys are top-notch.
Well, I appreciate that, Dave. We try to work hard for everybody we represent, and we try to help people that we don't represent.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Your compassion level is second to none. I mean, the heart and the soul, the technical expertise. I could go on and on. It sounds like I want to be an attorney now just to join you guys. It's incredible. But, you know, off there, we were talking a little bit about something I thought was really interesting, and I promise we will get into guardianships. The listeners are probably saying, wait, you advertise guardianships. Yeah, we'll get to it. We still have 40 minutes, so we got plenty of time. A covenant marriage. What is a covenant marriage?
A covenant marriage is a marriage whereby, in addition to the marriage ceremony and the normal things that go with that, you sign a contract, a covenant, and that contract basically converts what is a no-fault marriage in Arizona, meaning anybody can get divorced for any reason as long as they say they have irreconcilable differences and conciliation won't work. to a marriage that requires fault. It requires abandonment, infidelity, abuse, that type of thing. So people that have a regular marriage can convert it to a covenant marriage, and it requires a little more work, a little more than just going down, paying your $500 and filing for divorce.
Now, why would people do that? Is it two people that have thought it through strategically in a way and say, hey, this means a lot to me, this marriage, and we don't want to make it easy to get divorced. We want to make it tougher, so we're going to make sure at the back end you just can't get in as easy or get out as easy as you can get in.
I think that's probably a good way to summarize it, Dave. It makes it harder to get out of. It's similar to a contract that you might enter into where you say, any disputes we have, we agree to submit them to binding arbitration or mediation. It's a way that looking forward you can and people should anticipate when they get married that they're going to have bumps in the road. They may be financial, they may be health issues, they may be any number of things. And recognizing before you're in the middle of it that it will come up, and if it does come up, this is how we're going to handle it, is it's always better. It's always better to address it than in the middle of a fight.
And you know, so, I like that. That makes a lot of sense because a lot of people are, let me ask you, would some people say it takes the emotions out of marriage? However, it's much more effective if you look beyond the emotions. You want it to be a rock solid partnership, right? So how would you address that?
Well, I wouldn't say that it takes the emotion out. I think that perhaps a premarital agreement, a prenuptial, as your listeners may have heard the term, takes some of emotion out. That's a division of assets and responsibilities, you know, in the event of divorce, during marriage. You can cover any number of things in a prenuptial. The covenant marriage is more about what it takes to get divorced, what it takes to split up. And you can't just split up because I forgot to put the cap on the toothpaste and you got mad. It has to raise to a certain level. And it's better if people think about that, I think, ahead of time and say, look, we don't want to be either one of us to be able to get out of this because we're mad for a week or a month or because we're upset about not putting the cap on the toothpaste or forgetting to take the garbage out. We want to, going into this, know that it is a big commitment. And I think it forces people to look at what a commitment marriage is. And I think probably prior to the economic crisis that we're in now, it was easy to get out, and people would just, we're not getting along, let's get divorced, it's easy, and it's over with before you know it, instead of waiting till you calm down and recognize, you know, when we got married, we knew we were going to have problems, and we knew we wouldn't split up unless these really bad things happen. They haven't happened yet, so we can't get divorced, so let's work it out.
See, I like that. That's a good way to go ahead and do things. And, you know, I knew someone. Let me ask you this on a prenuptial agreement. Can it cover future earnings? So if someone, let's say, in fact, this person was on our show about a month ago and described this in front of everyone on the air, that when they got married, the husband was going to be a doctor but wasn't yet. But it was a prenup, according to her, that covered everything after he became a doctor, all earnings. And does that sound even right? I couldn't even comprehend how that could possibly be a valid prenup.
It's not valid until the court says it's valid. But that is a provision that can legally be put in a prenuptial agreement. If, however, in that situation, you had a doctor get married and the other person stayed home to raise the kids, and the doctor's prenup said that all of his income was going to be a separate property. It doesn't have to be a doctor. I don't want to target doctors. But anybody that was financially successful, the court will not hold the prenuptial valid if it, A, is not in the best interest of any kids. In other words, they would not be able to be taken care of. Or B, would require the other spouse to be on some type of financial assistance. They would find it to be inequitable. The way that people try to avoid that problem is they, and almost without exception, require both parties to seek legal counsel before signing a prenuptial agreement. But even if they do that, the court is not going to hold it to be enforceable if it would require one of the spouses to receive public assistance as a result.
So if you were representing, let's say in this case, the wife, and she worked as she helped her husband go through college, you might say, wait a minute, are you sure you want to give away all that future earnings? You know, you might want to say that, right?
Oh, I definitely would say that, and I would probably decline to if after counseling that client she said no, she still wanted to sign it, or he said no, he still wanted to sign it, I would probably say, you know, maybe you better talk to another lawyer because I can't in good conscience be part of it.
Yeah, it sort of sounds like you're really getting off on the wrong foot there. It's almost like you sort of anticipate that, yeah, you're going to get a free ride, you know, get someone to pay your way through school, and then at the end, adios.
Exactly. And you could rely on the court finding that to be an unconscionable agreement, but that's a big risk because the court could say, well, you had a lawyer, you looked at it, you knew what you were getting into, and so you're going to have to live with it. You're just above being able to or being required to have financial assistance, so we're going to hold this as enforceable. And frankly, let me take the lawyer cap on and put on the Blake Whiteman happily married of 27-year cap. I would never want to plan for divorce. I would never want to set my wife or anybody else up for a situation where they could be taken advantage of. And so that's why I would probably, if somebody wanted to do that, wanted to give that right away, would say, I just can't represent you. I don't feel comfortable. I don't think you're doing what's in your best interest. And if this guy really loves you or gal really loves you, you know, why is he insisting on this? And that's, that, like I said, that's taking the lawyer cap off and putting the Blake Whiteman happily married for 27 years out there to my lovely wife, Pam, who's probably listening.
Oh, excellent. A hello to Pam then. Let's get her to call in.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. All right. You know, but the integrity is very important. And when we come back, actually, I do have a question on that. Can you actually separate the attorney's hat with the person's hat, or is it all in one? It's almost like the Supreme Court justices. Can you really separate, constitutional law from your opinion or your influence on how you grew up? But anyway, we'll be right back with Blake Whiteman from Reitenauer, Heighton & Lewis in about 2 minutes.
KXXT.
When I was about 7 or 8 years old, I started smoking. Then when I was about 16 years old, I ended up smoking a pack a day, and then ended up smoking 3 packs a day. And then when my son was born in 94, I decided then I wanted to quit smoking. You got to have somebody to support you. There has to be at least one person in your life to be able to talk to and say, hey, I need help. The day I quit was the day that life began again.
Only you can make you quit. If you're ready, we can help. Call the Arizona Smokers Helpline at 800-55-66-222 or visit ashline.org.
I smoked roughly 25 years. I have a 5-year-old son, and I didn't have him till I was 40 years old. By the time he's ready to graduate high school, I'll be 60. And if I kept on this path of smoking, there's a good chance that I might not even be around for that. You have to want to quit smoking. And I found out that the best way was with a coach and with the Smokers Helpline.
Only you can make you quit. If you're ready, we can help. Call the Arizona Smokers Helpline at 800-55-66-222 or visit ashline.org.
Are you earning 8% on your money? Hi, I'm Dan Cochimilio. I can guarantee 8% annual growth for future income. That's right, 8% guaranteed annual growth for future income that you can never outlive. It's your money, money that God has put you in charge of managing. Are you a good steward of your money? How do you know if you are? Do you know if your money is 100% safe from market losses? Is your estate planning as good as it could be? Are you trusting the answers to money questions to a person who doesn't share a Christ-centered worldview? I believe there are people out there who don't care about you as much as they care about getting your money. I don't operate that way. I offer free consultation and will help you with estate planning and show you how to double or even triple your money for retirement. My purpose is to help you secure your money. It's that simple. So call me, Dan Cochimilio, at 623-825-3900. That number again is 623-825-3900. That's
623-825-3900. Arizona Station, 1010 KXXT. On the web at familyvaluesradio.net.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Law Talk, and special in-studio guests, we have Blake Whiteman from Reidenauer, Hyten and Lewis. And we've talked some good stuff. Divorces and prenuptial agreements, covenant marriage agreements, and a little psychology, a little sports, ASU, U of A, ASU won this year. Oh, I didn't say that. Yes, I did. Why don't we talk? I was going to mention one thing before we talk about guardianships. Is it possible really to separate? You're talking before the break between the attorney's hat and the person's hat. Is it really hard to separate those two, or is it for you? I don't think it is. I think you wear both hats, and it's part of you.
It's definitely part of me, I believe, and part of all of the lawyers that I work with, and that's one of the reasons we get along so well. But it's easy to do if you – I always tell the client, just like we did before the break, look, I'm taking my lawyer's hat off now, and I'm putting on my Blake Whiteman, father, husband, businessman, whatever the situation is, hat, and I think you might want to consider doing this because here are the ramifications. But you just make clear to the client that what's legal advice and what's personal counseling advice, if you will.
Right. Or just from a practical standpoint, from a human integrity standpoint, and what's going to create less pain in the long run is good advice, usually.
Well, I think it is.
Yeah.
I'll tell somebody, just like you would in a CPA setting, you can do XYZ legally, but if you do Z, then these are the consequences. And in the long term, your partner who you've managed to squeeze an extra couple of percentage points out of or whatever is going to be unhappy, and it is probably not going to make your business as successful.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. And that's why the integrity goes a long way. So when you pick people, professional people or anyone, look at their integrity, their character, their behavior, their mindset, and not just their technical expertise. I think that goes a long way.
In your doctor, in your CPA, in your lawyer, and in anybody.
Absolutely. So, guardianships, as we promised. All right. So, why don't you tell us a little bit, like, what is a guardianship, or who or what is a guardian, and a little background on that, and why it's important?
Well, a guardian is somebody who basically takes the position of a parent for a limited purpose. It can be a long-term purpose, situation that I have where a father murdered a mother. The father then took his own life, and now you have children that don't have parents, so you have to appoint a guardian who can basically act as their parents. That does not mean that they adopt them or change their last name. It's just they have certain legal obligations. That's the extreme case. Another situation would be father and mother in the military. They're deployed. They want to name a guardian before they go out of town so that that person could sign for their medical care, maybe deposit their, paychecks, get money out of the bank for them. Maybe they have a part-time job at Quiznos and they have a uniform gift to minors account. And so the guardian could then, acting as a conservator, because a lot of times they are appointed guardian and conservator together, manage that person's finances, sign for their medical care. Another situation is a minor who's got a tort claim. He's in a car accident, or somehow he comes into some substantial sum of money. The court will monitor the person that takes care of that money. They will determine whether or not the claim can be settled. A lot of listeners may not know that you can't just sign a settlement for your child if he's injured in an accident. You have to have a court approval. Well, to get court approval, you have to be a guardian and conservator of that child, and so as guardian, you first petition to be guardian and conservator, and then you petition to have the court approve the settlement, and then you can place it in a restricted account. You can do a structure where a given amount is given to the child at, say, 18 and a certain amount for college and maybe for a down payment on a house. And you can do it in such a way that you avoid tax liability. If you just put it in an account, then it earns interest. There would be tax liability. If you did it as a structure, the total amount, maybe the present value is $50,000, but it's going to pay $200,000 because you structured it. Well, you don't pay taxes on the $200,000. You would only pay taxes if you got the $50,000 initially and then invested it and reached $200,000. So you avoid some tax liability. That's another reason. Parents are, for whatever reason, unable to care for the children. Maybe there's a medical condition. Maybe they're have a substance abuse problem. Maybe we don't know where dad is and mom's injured but not deceased. You need to have somebody that can act as a parent, sign for medical care, do those types of things.
Now, is there alternative to guardianships? I mean, let's say no one wants to be a guardian. Does the state come in if necessary? And you hear about foster care. Is that considered a guardian?
A foster parent has the same legal ability as a guardian, and typically a foster parent is named guardian of whatever minor children are in the foster parent's care. You can also have a situation where an adoption, so that's a little further than a guardianship, where same situation, if both parents are deceased, perhaps an uncle or an aunt would adopt children. It's a further step beyond guardianship. So there are alternatives to guardianships. It's generally not a good idea to take care of somebody's children for any length of time without either being named a guardian or at a minimum getting a temporary power of attorney for health care, which is sort of a guardianship, a mini guardianship without going to court. You know, parents can sign a document that allows, you know, their next door neighbor, their friend to seek medical care. It's probably better though if it's going to be more than a month to get a guardianship.
Oh, that's interesting. And now, how do the guardianships end? How does that happen?
They can end for a number of basis. Number one, if it's a guardianship for settlement of an injury claim and it was placed in a restricted account, when that child turns 18, that account is now his. The guardianship would terminate. If the parents that were deployed to the Middle East in the military, they can come back and then they can terminate the guardianship. If you've got a foster parent situation where the mother or father or both were unable to parent and then they rehabilitated, and I use that term not to say that there was something wrong with them, but there are services through the juvenile court that allow parents to rehabilitate that they can then take the children back and that form of guardianship would end.
So there's a lot of different ways that it can end. Now, so it sounds like to me, so you have various alternatives. I mean, foster, guardianship, adoption, probably each with different restrictions or legal rights, I suspect.
Yes, and the court keeps track, especially of financial situations. If you're a guardian and conservator and it's not in a restricted account or it's not in a structure, you have to report to the court every year what you did. And you may have been named guardian in a will. Parents have the right to select who they best think would raise their kids. And that's something that everybody who has a will should look into. Who's going to raise my kids if we're both killed in a plane crash or a car crash? They have to report to the court. And the terms of their appointment may say that they can spend it for the kids' education. Well, they would go into court at the end of the year and say, I bought them a new computer. I bought these reading materials. I paid for this tutor for math, and here's how much income that this fund earned, and here's how much we spent. And then the court approves it every year. A lot of times they'll require a bond that the guardian conservator post a bond with the court, and that doesn't mean they have to have the cash. That just means they have to go to a bonding company, purchase a bond so that it protects the minor or incapacitated person.
You know, it's interesting as you were talking about that with wills, appointing a guardian in a will. I think there was a movie called Life or something like it, something like that, that just came out maybe a month, 2 months ago, Catherine Hagel, I think. Did you see that movie?
I have not seen it, but if it when it comes out on Netflix, I'm sure I will, because we just put that system in, and it's amazing.
And we're going to talk about that, too. That sounded pretty cool when you told me off there. This was an interesting movie because there was a married couple had, I think, just one small kid, maybe 3 or 4 years old, I forget. Or no, it actually is a little infant, I think, maybe 2 years old or one. And the husband had a best friend, and the wife had the best friend, but the two friends couldn't get along. But they were both appointed guardians. And sadly, the couple got, I think died in a car crash or something. So a couple questions on this, even though it was a movie. It was a very good movie, by the way. It was funny. Is it, if you're appointed to be a guardian, do you have to accept it?
No, you do not have to accept it. You have to, if you do accept it, you would sign a document. They're called letters, but they're not letters that you would mail. They're just letters of appointment. And basically it outlines all of your obligations and that you accept those. You have to sign those before you'll be appointed. The court will not name a guardian that doesn't want to be a guardian.
So have you ever seen someone saying no? Or is that usually discussed in the will, like, hey, we're going to appoint you guardian? In the movie, they didn't tell the two people.
Yeah, it's I don't know if it's usually discussed. I certainly, when our firm drafts a will and somebody is proposing a guardian for their kids, the first thing that Jim would tell them is make sure that you talk to these people so that they're aware of what would happen, that you've chosen them. First, they'll probably be honored by it, and that's something that they're willing to do. I've not run into a situation where somebody's been asked to be a guardian and turned it down.
Yeah, that would seem sort of unlikely, I suspect.
Well, it's usually a close friend or relative that has been talked to, and even if not spoken to ahead of time, is someone that cared about the parents, so they care about the kids.
Now, is it a situation like in the movie where you can actually pick two guardians?
You can pick two guardians. You can pick co-guardians or co-conservators. It's probably, unlike the movie, best if those two know each other and preferably be married or in a relationship.
Well, they knew each other. They just didn't like each other. Basically the case. So you can pick two then.
You can pick two. You can pick your next door neighbor, Matt and Nancy, to be guardians of your kids. And that's usually a good idea if you're selecting who's going to be the guardian of your children. If they've got kids, you see how they raise their kids. It's compatible with how you raise your kids. Maybe they go to the same church or synagogue. Maybe they enjoy the same types of things. So it's best for your kids. And that's really what it's all about, is making a situation that if you're not there, what is the best alternative to you not being there?
And I would suspect most people would probably pick someone where the kids probably know already, a family member, for example. And certainly someone you totally trust.
Absolutely, Dave. It's better if the kids already have a relationship with them. It may be a relationship that's, your brother and sister, their aunt and uncle, live out of town, but they see them at Christmas and Thanksgiving and those types of things, so they know it's, Uncle Kurt or Aunt Jenny or whoever it is. But you want to pick somebody that knows the kids. And family members certainly, at least initially, a good pool from which to select your guardians.
Yeah, so unlike me when I was 4 years old negotiating with my parents to have Hugh Hefner as my guardian, that would be different, I suspect. Right?
Well, if your parents knew Hugh Hefner and he was a family member, yeah. I suppose it'd be great.
I said it doesn't matter. I just want to get to the mansion, but that was a long time ago. That is interesting, but it's an
important. He's got a magazine out, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Yes. I'm the editor. No, I'm kidding. I think his daughter was editor or something. I think. He was in a movie, too, just recently called Miss March.
Really?
Yeah, and he looked pretty good. He's like, he's got to be in his 80s or something.
I think he's getting up there.
Yeah, he was pretty. It's amazing that empire. I've never been to the Playboy Mansion, though.
I have not been and probably will not.
Yeah. But I think Magic Johnson has. Anyway, that's what I heard. But, you know, that's a Hollywood scene. So lucky we're in Arizona.
Yeah. I mean my family, we lead a pretty plain life, I would say.
Well, that's good, though. A plain life is a good life.
Well, it's worked out good for us, and our kids have done real well, and we're very happy.
Well, I think that's awesome. And, you know, Einstein said it, make things as simple as possible, but no simpler. So he was a proponent of just make life simple.
For him, I think the theory of relativity was simple.
Yeah. Boy, was he smart, huh?
He was a smart guy.
No doubt. And you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Law Talk. Special in-studio guest Blake Whiteman from Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis, and we'll be right back.
Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac and special in-studio guest. We have Blake Whiteman from Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis, a great law firm. I always give a shout-out every time to your receptionist, Carol. She's phenomenal.
She is if she's listening, she is a sweetheart. She's I don't know how – a good face for the clients to meet when they come in.
Oh, yeah.
Super, super gal. Takes care of, you know, do you need a Coke? Do you need something to drink? Let me have your parking to validate it. Great sense of humor. Her daughter actually works for our firm, too, Emily, and she's a sweetheart, too. But we've got to write down, and that's, I think, one of the things, too. It's not just the lawyers. It's the staff. It's the process servers. We all have the same game plan in mind.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and she is awesome. And I'm hoping next time I come in, she'll say, let's see, I'm not going to ask if you want a Coke or water or orange juice. Do you want to meet Hugh Hefner? No. Okay, I'm just kidding. I don't think she'll ask me that. But she's a sweetheart. She is, you know, that's a tough position to really have someone as great as she is. I've never met anyone in that position as great as she is.
Well,
ever.
You have to remember that for the most part, people that are going to see a lawyer have some problem. Now, once in a while, it's they won the Powerball and they need Jim to draft a trust for them.
Yeah.
But more often than not, it's not on such great terms. And so you're dealing with people in tough situations. So all she talks to are people that are already, by definition, in a tough situation. Mm. And she does a great job, too. She does as much counseling as the psychologist that we referred to euphemistically earlier.
So that's awesome. You're real blessed, and as well as she is, to be at that firm. Now, let me ask you a question, and let's see if I can even pronounce it. Guardian ad litem?
Close. Guardian ad litem.
I was really close.
Right. And that's a term that I probably should have brought up. It's nothing that your listeners are more than likely going to be appointed to, because it's almost always a lawyer. But what a guardian ad litem is, in a case where you have a juvenile or incapacitated person, rights and privileges being adjudicated, who's going to be the guardian, who's going to be the conservator, the court will often appoint a guardian ad litem to act for the benefit of that minor throughout the litigation. And that can be even in a divorce case. They call it a best interest attorney in a divorce case, but it's really a guardian ad litem. It's somebody who looks out for the child's interest until the court determines what's in the child's best interest. And maybe you've got, to use your movie scenario, let's assume that those two couples were already married, because I'm assuming, because it's a Catherine Hegel movie, that she probably ends up in love with this guy and they live happily ever after.
That's true. How do you know that?
That's they always end that way with. But let's assume that they did, that wasn't the case, and there were two competing people seeking to be appointed guardian. The court would more than likely, in Arizona, and I suspect most jurisdictions, appoint a guardian ad litem to look out for what the child's best interest is, because maybe these two people are fighting over this guardian because he's a child actor or she's a child actor, or not fighting over the guardian, but fighting over the child because there's some other benefit they perceive. They've got a house. If we get to be appointed guardian, we get to live in the house.
Oh.
So the court wants to make sure that there's somebody that's looking out for just that child's best interest, and they appoint a guardian ad litem, which is, in Arizona, almost exclusively another attorney.
See, that's interesting. That's something it's good to know, you know, some of the rules here. Now, how about if you're living with a child who is not and the person living with the kid is not their guardian, should they become a guardian?
Well, they have to decide whether or not they're willing to take on the legal responsibility, the reporting to the court, and some of the things that we've talked about. But they really should be, because if they're living with a child and the child breaks his arm in the gym in middle school and they've got to take him to the hospital, they're going to run into a lot of problems starting to sign all the release and consent to treatment forms if they're not a legal guardian. So they really should be appointed guardian.
How about a case if you're not married but you have a kid together, but you're on the birth certificate, do you have that the legal rights for medical care? If you're the boyfriend.
The father. Say you're the father. And you're on the birth certificate, but you're
not married.
But you're not married. Okay. Well, you're going to have the right to consent to medical care, because you're going to be presumably the father. Oh. And I don't mean me presuming it. By law, you will presume to be the father, so that a hospital will let you sign for treatment. In that situation, though, just to take it one step further, you're probably better off filing a petition for paternity. And people think of that as, oh, that's just to determine who the father is. But it's a lot more than that. It also includes determining custodial and visitation rights, as well as child support and who provides the medical care. And that's important so that you don't get into a situation where, let's say the father and mother break up and they're on the birth certificate, but we don't have a custody order. So what weekends do father get? What weekend does mother get? What do we do about Christmas? What do we do about summer vacation? Those things are all handled in a paternity action, exactly like they're handled in a divorce case. So if you're on a birth certificate, it's even if you're living together, it's probably better to go ahead and do a paternity action, so that you can establish basically a court approval of the relationship, and in the event you split up, you've got some guidelines to follow as far as visitation.
So it's almost like a covenant thing of marriage, like we talked about. Even when things aren't going bad, if it's good, still do a petition for paternity if you have that situation.
Absolutely, because police officers are not lawyers. They're great first responders, they're great protectors of our liberty, but they're not lawyers. And if you show them a birth certificate and you're on the birth certificate, they will say, well, that's not really a court order. If you've got a paternity order, that's going to be signed by a judge and you're not going to run into a problem.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well,
it's
preventative maintenance, if you will. If you do it, even if you're living together and you're happy and you've got kids, if you get that paternity order, then you're never going to run into a situation where you have to explain what your rights are.
Totally makes sense. That is excellent. And we only probably have a few minutes left. Let's see if we can get the two other questions in. Are there reasons people should not become a guardian?
If they are already in a situation where they're under a lot of stress, if they've got a lot of kids and they financially are having trouble, and to add another child would put a great burden on them, then they probably shouldn't do it. If they don't feel that they could serve the, let's use an example where the parents are deceased, if they didn't hold the same beliefs as the parents, whether that be religiously or any other belief, maybe they shouldn't. If they don't like soccer and the kid likes soccer and they don't want to take the kids to soccer games, maybe gotcha. It's better if somebody else.
That makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. And how about if you're already a parent, would they ever need to become their own child's guardian?
That's the case we touched on a little bit earlier and talked about, which is where your child, maybe they inherit a lot of money or they get a lot of money from a personal injury claim. They're going to have to be appointed guardian and conservator to settle that claim because a parent cannot settle that claim. So there will be situations. I don't recommend that all parents run out and be appointed guardians because the courts will probably ask, why are you here? You can sign for medical care. Well, just in case my kid gets in a car accident. So that's something you probably want to wait till it actually is a need for it before you do it.
Now, are there all cases where you need an attorney to do some of these things, like a petition for paternity, or because I suspect it gets pretty complex, and it's always my opinion is always wise to get someone that knows what they're doing.
This is the example I give clients. It's kind of like changing an alternator in a car. Some people can do it themselves, and there's self-help websites that the Maricopa County Superior Court has, and I believe it's maricopacounty.gov, but I'm not positive. There's a self-help service center in most of the Superior Court locations, but it's not like changing your oil. I mean, we can all probably change our oil. It's a lot less expensive to have it done at some of the places that do it for a living, but you can do it. A guardianship's not changing our oil. It's an alternator. It's not a transmission rebuild, but it's an alternator. And most of the time, especially if it's contested or if there's a personal injury settlement, you're going to need a lawyer.
You know, that totally makes sense. I'm asked all the time, should I do my own tax return? And, you know, there's some cases where you can if you just have one W-2, perhaps. But I said, you know, if you have a business, I give the example, not the alternator. I go, it's like trying to fix your brakes and you have no clue. Don't go on the freeway and don't drive.
That's right.
Really, I mean, it gets too complex. And, you know, unfortunately, that's the way it is. But it's always wise to go to someone that knows.
If for nothing else, just go consult with a lawyer to find out if you're getting into something that's over your head. It's always better. I would much rather take a case from the start that I've drafted all the documents and pleadings in than something that somebody's done by themselves pro per and they miss something. Now I've got to file a motion for leave to amend, meaning court, please let me go back and fix this. It's easier it'd be like the alternator. I put it on backwards and it's easier for the mechanic to do it right the first time.
And there's some things that you do as a mechanic, if you don't do it right, you actually start hurting other areas of the car and that could be a problem. And especially with tax law, you know, if you try to do one thing and it affects another thing and then you get audited and then it keeps going on and on.
Even when I get the letter back from the IRS with a refund in it, I'm nervous. So I'm a guy that doesn't do it that myself. I like to have somebody else sign off on that.
Remember the commercial, the muffler commercial? You could pay me now or pay me
later.
Exactly. It's true, and usually it's more costly if you pay later.
Well, I would think in your situation, you'd rather do somebody's tax return than handle their audit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I do a lot of IRS representation. However, it's someone else that did the return. And I like that better. I don't, you know. But anyway, you're absolutely right. And Blake Whiteman, thank you so much for coming in. You're awesome.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
This was a lot of fun, and it helped a lot of people.
I hope it did. And if there's anything anybody needs, a follow-up question, they can certainly call our office. We do free consultations. I'll be happy to talk to your listeners.
Well, thank you so much, and stay tuned for Understanding Autism right now.